You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are On the Couch. Welcome, everybody. Let me ask you something. Do you worry a lot? Are you one of those people who are always trying to control things so something doesn't go wrong? Are you always playing out the what if something bad happens scenarios in your mind? Well, you know, most of the folks I see in my practice have some sort of anxiety. And actually, according to recent reports, nearly 20% of Americans suffer from anxiety. 75% of them worry about the economy, of course, and that's natural. But really, it's getting hairy this time, especially with the so-called upcoming fiscal cliff that we're going to be dealing with. I want you to get some help with your worries, though. We're gonna say, hey, don't worry. Be happy today. Don't worry. Come on, let's work on this. Let's get it straight. Let's try to help you feel much better about yourself, huh? And my special guest today is going to help you with that. Her name is Catherine Tristan. She's author of the Revolutionary Solution-Oriented Guide. It's Why Worry, Stop Coping, and Start Living. Catherine, thanks for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. It's nice to have you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? I read your book, and I really appreciate how much it made sense. About what we do to ourselves, you know, when we have fears and worry and, gosh. You also give some great suggestions and advice, and I highly recommend this for you guys out there. If you'd like to know how to change that, you know, it's a destructive process, isn't it, Catherine?
Oh, it absolutely is. And yeah. And the sad part is a lot of times we're not even aware we're doing it to ourselves. It's just the way we've always thought and done things. And it can take its toll for sure.
Boy, it sure can. And coming up also, we're going to tell listeners how they can get a hold of the book and get more information about you as well. I encourage listeners as well to give me a call if you have any questions for Catherine. The number here is 323-203-0815. Or, of course, what you can do also is email me if you're a little shy, you'd like to do so. I'll answer your questions here live. It's docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com, docmichelle@AOL.com. And I encourage you guys, if you have any questions or worries, to, you know, let me know what's going on with you. Catherine, you talk about writing your own book, which I really appreciate, from the trenches. You know, you were so open about your own suffering from worrisome thoughts. What was your own experience that really inspired you to write this book, and of course your other books as well?
Well, I consider myself to be an anxiety survivor.
Oh.
And the thing is, earlier in my life, I kind of was it started out as just being a worrier, a very sensitive person.
Yeah.
And if things didn't go right, I worried about that. And then when I got in college, things really started to heat up because I started developing more feelings of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, during college finals,
yeah,
everything just sort of hit me and I developed a panic attack and I had no idea what that was.
Yeah.
So frightening.
Were you thinking, oh my gosh, I think I'm dying here. My heart's palpitating.
I'm dying. My heart is racing.
Yeah.
I can't breathe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is this? And it comes out of the blue for a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you know, it had its impact. And I did anything after that I could do to avoid having that feeling. And so, honestly, off and on, for the next 20 years, I had issues with panic, got so bad that I didn't even leave the St. Louis area for over 20 years.
Wow.
And I'm in a scientific profession. It's very illogical. And I felt ashamed and humiliated by all of this. But then I found my way out of it, and that's the good news about it.
Yeah. Well, good for you. You're amazing. I was so interested in your book. I did my dissertation when I worked at a psychiatric clinic, and I worked with a lot of anxious people. Anxiety disorder people. And I did a comparison between what's called autogenic therapy, in managing anxiety, which is, Catherine, it's that imagery with, it's sort of like self-hypnosis as well and hypnosis versus progressive muscle relaxation treatments. And although they were both somewhat effective, they weren't all that greatly effective. And you talk about our minds, and you say everybody worries, but how can we determine when we're worrying in a harmful way to ourselves or, as you call it, when we're hitting the red zone?
Right. Well, as you say, there are a lot of things that we could do. A lot of things don't seem to help. But, one of the biggest things to do is first to kind of wake up, how is my mind working? And how do I know if my worries are hitting the red zone? So I suggest four things to think about, assessing yourself. One is, am I having consistent sleep problems? Do I go to bed, worrying and wake up the same way? Am I overeating and undereating? And the other thing is, am I just kind of crabby and on edge and either explode or become coldly silent a lot? When things start churning around our minds, those types of things to me are indicative that we're getting into the red zone of our worries.
Wow, you're so right. You talk about what you call our core power. Now, it's in an acronym, C-O-R-E. And if we can tap into that, it will really help us deal with worrying. So what are some of those concepts in the acronym mean?
So what I thought, I was trying to explain what's an easy, understandable way to describe this.
Right.
And, no mumbo jumbo and all this stuff. And I decided really what worked for me was working from the inside out. And so I thought, when I looked back and tried to examine how that works, it was, to me, a core concept, C-O-R-E.
Yeah.
Well, the C in core stood for choice. Mm. And that simply says, I am choosing the way I am thinking. I really am not a victim, even though I feel like one.
Mm.
So the power of choice, become aware of your thoughts and then learn to choose them more wisely. And then, so that's the C. And the O, I said, stands for outlook. So once we find out that we're not thinking in the most helpful ways, we can create outlook makeovers to help us, transform that negative thinking into ways to deal with life and those thoughts and emotions more positively.
Uh-huh.
And that's the O. And the R in core stands for risk. You can tune up the car all you want and make the best changes you can, but until you get out there and start expanding your comfort zone about things that worry you, you're really not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And by taking small measured risks out of your worries, that really helps accelerate it. And then the last thing in core is the E, and I chose that to mean embracing our spiritual, our intuitive side that really gives life meaning. And once you can get to that point, you can look at things from a higher perspective and learn acceptance, but also you're creating solutions. But doing it in this way, changing from your core, allows you to do that.
Wow. Good stuff. By the way, in case you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Catherine Tristan. She's author of her latest book. It's The Revolutionary Solution-Oriented Guide, Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. And I really did enjoy it because it had a lot of concepts in it that are, some of the proven helpful therapeutic aids that help people. But it goes beyond that, which I really appreciate in helping a lot of folks out there with their, anxiety and worry and things like that. You talk about number one. Let's talk a little bit about the first core concept. You talk about waking up to our hidden powers of awareness and choice. How can we take charge of ourselves and sort of shift to that you know, change? Because I have so many people who say to me, I can't stop thinking. I can't do it. I can't. And I, you know, you don't like the word can't. I know that as well.
That's right. We're going to talk about that one for sure. And so, yes. So your question is like, you know, are we are victims or are we choosers?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the thing is you have to keep things in balance, right? Mm-hmm. There is a good side of worry. Worry is a natural emotion. It's part of, you know, the way we've evolved. And so to me, because it's an emotion in us, it serves a positive aspect. So what is that? Well, worry is good when it helps you over-prepare for, like, if you're presenting a presentation for your company or you say you've got a test coming up, as long as you don't obsess over it. That's the balance, the downside. Mm. Maybe it helps you get in better shape for a sports competition if you worry about it. Maybe you're worried about walking home at night. You don't want to turn down that dark street. Mm. Maybe that's worry's voice trying to help you. Mm. But you don't want to ever not go out at night. So that's the good side of worry. Now, should we talk about the bad side of worry?
Let's go for it.
So, in my opinion, we have a psychological immune system, just like we have a biological immune system. That's what I've been studying for the last 30 years is our biological immune system. Mm. The psychological immune system has the mandate to protect us. Mm-hmm. And the way this works, the way I think about this working, is that it's like a soldier inside trying to protect us and feeding thoughts on a conveyor belt. But the soldier was never meant to run the battle.
Oh,
that's
boy.
Up to the general. We're the general who decides what thoughts to take off that conveyor belt.
Hmm.
And so that's how to understand it, is that you are the chooser. And so that is a simple way of understanding how to do it.
Wow. That is really true. You know, we do have to choose how we perceive things. And intuition is a big part of that, too, Catherine. You know, it's very important.
Yes, because you've got a very noisy mind. You don't hear that voice of intuition and, you know, that gut level feeling. You don't have access to that help. But if you can learn to be more peaceful and quiet that ever chattering mind, then yes, that intuitive side can be very helpful.
Mm. You talk about in the acronym CORE, you talk about, the outlooks, changing our outlooks. And how can we cope with things like true financial or, you know, as you discussed, you know, worry about grades and the pressures of just getting in through in society or even, you know, relationship problems we might be having? How do we change our outlooks, Catherine?
Well, what I boiled that down to, like, again, trying to keep things simple and practical.
Yeah.
What can we do tomorrow? You know, so I boiled that down to a couple of different emotions, which I think are really strong worry triggers.
Mm.
And that is, you know, perfectionism is one. We want it perfect, you know, we want it right, we want it our way. Mm. And when it doesn't go that way, then we feel a lot of stress and conflict because, you know, stress comes from conflicts in our expectations.
Oh.
So we have to. So perfectionism is one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other three, which I call a bag of junk, are blame, anger, and guilt.
Yep.
So, you know, those things, there are lots of ways in the book that I give solutions for how to handle those in a productive, positive way so that they won't be such a worry triggers in your life.
Mm-hmm. You know, and are you talking about the blame, anger, and guilt we all have within ourselves or that we project onto others?
Both.
Ah.
So, you know, so to me, you know, emotions that happen to us, I think were built in at some point to help us.
Yeah.
So I think we need to understand how to handle ourselves, basically.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so for blaming, we blame others, we blame ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, to me, the antidote for blaming is gratitude.
Ah.
You know, find out what's right about a situation, not what's wrong. Find out what we're doing right or trying to do right rather than foist that on ourselves and berate ourselves. So, you know, blame is something in its positive ways maybe helps you figure out where this problem go wrong so that I don't do it again. But a lot of times it's more harmful than helpful.
Boy, is that true. You know, it's working on our own blame within ourselves. Yeah, and, you know, there's so much that goes along with that, Catherine, with, you know, how we grow up and the messages we take in. And I talk about this a lot on the show and the, you know, anger and frustration we feel because we may not have a voice and feel powerless in the world. And then the guilt we turn on ourselves. That's so tough, you know, and we're just embracing all these things and so-called beating ourselves up. You know, it's hard to get over that.
Yeah. And it's just like a program, yeah. You know, the more we do it, the more we continue to do it. And so we, yeah. You know, you have to interrupt those types of emotions. Otherwise,
yeah.
you know, like I say, awareness and choice are your two most powerful tools in that. You know, wake up to the fact that you are blaming others and that you're blaming yourself. You know, find some productive ways of handling it like we just talked about. You know, bring more gratitude into your life. Blame is a big one. Anger is another big one, right? A lot of people are, you know, fly off the handle or just become coldly silent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got it, girl. I mean, that's, you know, we are, I think, sometimes our worst enemies. You know, we really are.
So, you know, so what do you do then, you know, when you have anger?
Yeah.
That's the question,
isn't
it?
That's right. That's exactly right. What do you do? You have to change your outlook. You have to change your choices. And
you know, it's, go ahead,
No, you go. Go ahead.
Well, you know, so anger, I mean, that's a difficult one for a lot of people with worry because we don't know how to handle the negative emotions. And to me, anger, it was always something I had to learn how to deal with. I'd be great with the positive emotions, but when I would just, my fuses would you know, fizzle when I had the anger thing, like, what do I do? So to me, the antidote to anger as a trigger for worry and, you know, is to communicate, to cultivate clarity of communication. And so in my book, I gave several ways that I learned and I thought were really pretty good ways to put you at the helm of your boat, you know, to steer yourself in a better way. Like, if somebody hurt you, you instead of saying you're a jerk, you know, you say, I am upset that someone I cared about said that to me. So you place it, as you probably have talked about before, keep yourself as this is the way I felt.
Yeah.
So that's a big one too, is understanding how to communicate better to figure out how to handle your anger.
Yeah, that's really true. That's a great one. And you've covered the gamut of, you know, kind of different ways you can look at managing your thoughts and managing your reactions and sort of where it begins. And I'd like to talk about that as well, about the physiological, you know, part of it. If you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. And, you know, my guest today is the author of a really terrific book, Catherine Tristan. The book's called Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. I think the book came out this week. I believe it did. And
right. Yes, Tuesday.
Cool. Good deal. So we can turn people on to how to get hold of it and, of course, how to find out more about you a little bit further down the line here on the show. Another part of the acronym, Catherine, is, as you mentioned, taking risks. You know, kind of get out there a little bit. One of the classic ways to overcome fears and phobias, as you know, is exposure therapy. You know, that's been proven to a little bit, expose yourself to the feared object or situation, and you learn that you won't die after all. You know, even if you have a panic attack and you can't breathe, you're going to get through it. But this is a great concept. Can you give us a little bit more detail on taking risks? How should we do that?
Well, and I think, as you mentioned, it's a standard and a very good way, and it's something that I learned also from, I mean, I was in therapy for a while, and I took, you know, some of the things that I did actually did help me. They didn't cure me completely, but they gave me some pretty good tools, and I think one of the things that we have to realize is that we are our own safety net.
Mm-hmm.
Once we learned that we can rely on ourselves emotionally by doing the work that I talk about, in the, you know, by better choices, outlook, you feel more powerful. You feel you can handle your stresses, you can handle your emotions, and that, you know, you must be the one you run to, as I talked about. So, you know, because when you have, especially with anxiety or panic, you're always looking for safety. You want to avoid risking, right? This last thing you want to do is take anything that gives you those terrible feelings, but that also is the way to do it. And one of the things that I say in that chapter about risk is that, you know, let's tackle what we think we can do. We tackle our what's called upper limit threshold, where our set point is on what we think we can do. I mean, a lot of times that's set when you're a child before you ever have the ability to say, no, I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, tackle your upper limit threshold. That's like, you know, we actually can do a lot more if we take small steps, particularly, than we ever think we can.
Boy, is that true. You got to put that action out into the universe a little bit, huh?
Right. And, yeah. And even emotionally, you know, like, you know, in terms of relationships, and that's a risk, too, the risk of potentially getting hurt. So you have to be the one to understand how to do this. And and there are practical ways you can do when you take a risk, too, and those are, you know, different things you can do for your body, like learning how to feel more relaxed, like the progressive, you know, muscle relaxation you talked about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, meditation.
Oh, yeah.
Learn how to breathe better. Mm. Do the belly breathing that helps you, you know, restore your oxygen balance. And, and actually, when you breathe deeply, all the way down to your tummy, belly breathing, it stimulates the vagus nerve, and that activates your parasympathetic system, which is your rest and recover system.
Ooh, yeah.
So there are physical things you can do when you take risks, too, to make you feel more comfortable about what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, in case you don't know, folks, Catherine Tristan is a scientist, which I love about your book because you talk about science and spirit. You've been a scientist for over 30 years, and of course you've written so many articles and been published in medical, articles. You talk about the worlds of science and spirit. And, you know, there is a new trend towards connecting the two, and it really has been gaining momentum in a lot of recent years. Many of my listeners are familiar. I do talk about some of the concepts sometimes with the quantum physicists, you know, demonstrating that there's other consciousness and energy that can be measured and studied. So can you talk a little bit more about the connection between science and spirit and sort of what you have learned about what we're doing to ourselves when we're worrying?
Yes, I think that what we're doing is basically mangling our connection to our inner spirit. You know, worry puts us back into the only the physical realm, what we want to control, what we want, you know, and so we are trying to be in control and to be perfect in a basically non-controllable and imperfect world. Mm. So, you know, it's what I actually love this part of the book, and it to me it's the real gateway to healing is once you can embrace your spiritual side more. So, some of the science, the fun stuff of science lately is a new science called neurotheology. Mm. And one of the people who is at the forefront of that research is Dr. Andrew Newberg, N-E-W-B-E-R-G.
Okay.
He has done things like brain scans of Buddhist monks, Franciscan nuns, you know, when they're meditating versus before they go into it.
Yes.
And he found a region of the brain called the parietal region of the brain that was, during meditation, sharply decreased. Uh-huh. And it was lit up before, and then it stopped lighting up as much. Mm. Now, what's interesting is if this part of the brain is the region that orients us in space and time.
Uh-huh.
So the idea from Dr. Newberg is that this is consistent with the idea that you feel sometimes when you have a nice deep meditation or even in a spiritual practice of oneness and of unity and that we're all connected. So here is an example of a scientific study which supports that idea.
Wow.
Another fun thing is the idea of random number generators. You know, these have been the Institute of Noetic Sciences have placed these, and I think that's in California, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. You know, have placed these, you may have talked about these already at some point, random number generators around the world. They generate random numbers. They shouldn't do anything except that. Yet they've documented that, say, at times when a lot of the world, a mass of people feels a certain way, that it changes that.
Yes.
Hours and days before 9/11, for instance, was a sharp change in that randomness. Before the Japanese tsunami that we had last year, Princess Diane's funeral, all those things change the random. So what does that tell us? Mm-hmm. I think we're connected, and I think that's a scientific way of suggesting that.
Yeah, and intuitively, you know, as well. I mean, I think, you know, there are a lot of us who really, you know, there's, like you said, there's so much doubt and worry that sometimes we always go to the dark side and doubt our own intuitiveness and we doubt our own, you know, thinking because we say, well, is that just fear? Am I being paranoid or whatever? So I think you're right about the intuition and how we're all connected on that level.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it really helps you from an emotional, a mental, just a whole body, mind, body, yeah, spirit point of view. If you can learn to think of your life, mm-hmm, as, and the quote that I really like that, mm-hmm, that's been around for a while is that, you know, from Teilhard de Chardin, and a Jesuit philosopher and teacher, he said, you know, I am a spiritual being having a physical experience.
Oh, yeah.
And so, a lot of people know that quote, but it's like so true to me. And
right.
I love anything that we can embrace our spiritual side because that gives us an inner strength that is sustains us through a lot of trouble.
Exactly. I so agree with you. And again, it warms my heart that, you know, you are a scientist and you do bring up spirit. You do bring up the connection, you know, that we all have. In one of your chapters, you mentioned the Japanese philosophy of wabi-sabi. And it's not something, you know, green that you eat with your sushi.
Right.
You apply it to improving our lives. Can you elaborate a little bit more on wabi-sabi?
Yes. Wabi-sabi. What a great thing. It's it's basically originated from a Buddhist philosophy. It basically means imperfect beauty. And what they're saying is that there is beauty in the imperfect. It doesn't have to be our mind's eye that it has to be this way or that way. So wabi-sabi to me, imperfect beauty, what a great idea.
Yeah.
Let's consider redefining what we think of as perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And let's find beauty despite our cracks and imperfections. And, you know, there's a wabi-sabi section in the Tokyo Art Museum, and in it, you know, in a case, there's this big ancient vase, and there's a spotlight shining on it. But you know where it's shining? On this big crack right down the middle.
Interesting. Isn't
and
that
so,
interesting?
You know, we're all cracked. Let's face it.
That's right.
It's okay to be that way. And I think what it tells us ultimately is to try to develop a quiet acceptance of the transient but beautiful nature of our own lives that are in so many ways are imperfectly perfect.
That's well said. If you just tuned in here on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest today is Catherine Tristan. She's the author of the Solution-Oriented Guide. It's a really good guidebook. It's a very comfortable read. In paperback, available. Why worry? Stop coping and start living. It's really helpful and focuses on a lot of the therapeutic techniques that have really helped people, only with a little bit more of a different twist and with more depth and explanation, because she has been a scientist for a very long time and has worked in managing anxiety and worry much of her professional life, I would say. Catherine, you talk about the concepts of terribleizing and possibilizing. I love those words. How can we change our thinking from terribleizing to possibilizing to manage our worries?
Well, I think what that does is what happens is a lot of us are programmed, you know, actually our brains are wired for terribleizing. You know, it's what we've always done, and we don't recognize that's what we're doing. So what my suggestion is to, instead of thinking about the worst possible outcome, think about a better outcome. Now, here's the thing. Science is on your side.
Oh, yeah.
They say 85%. Scientific studies show that 85% of what we worry about never happens.
Wow.
So that is a huge amount. And instead of terribleizing when something happens, try switching that into something better. But, what I call possibilizing. Isn't it possible the worst scenario won't happen?
Right.
And let me give you a little explanation.
Okay.
This is from my own, and I still have to catch myself all the time. So I have had a little headache and, you know, got a little too busy and had a headache. And then within just about a 30-second period, I thought, oh, that's headache. Well, I don't usually get headaches. And, wow, I wonder if that's a brain tumor.
Yeah,
and I thought, well, if that's a brain tumor, am I going to need surgery or maybe chemotherapy?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'll be off of work for a while. Do I have my will up to date?
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly, 30 seconds into it, I go, wait, whoa, you know, let's just take an aspirin and take some deep breaths. You know, we're not going to die. So what it shows you is the very quick way that you can shoot down, into a path that's negative, and that happens all day long.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I think what we need to do is become better at catching it, uh-huh. and then to argue with ourselves and learn to disagree. That mm-hmm. is the, possibilizing aspect is that, okay, you should be solution-oriented, plan for problems. That's right. The nature of good worry. Mm. But let's not always see the negative outcome only.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said, 85% of the folks have shown in research what we worry about really never happens.
It just doesn't. It's amazing. It's a very good thing to arm yourself with that knowledge, too.
What I also love is you talk about the new scientific research, which shows how we can rewire our brains. Good news, Morgan news, to worry less and enjoy more. What we're doing when we have these persistent negative what-if thoughts is we're really wiring our brains for misery and addiction more and more. I mean, we are addicted to those feelings, aren't we, after a while?
It is. It is an addiction in the sense that it's a program that's always running in the background, and it can kick into place very quickly unless we rewire our brains. Mm. Because, you can think of, actually there was another study where people who've never played the piano in this particular study, took a group of people and had showed them a very brief little thing to play on the piano, and they practiced it, a half an hour a day for maybe 1 or 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. All right. The other group, they showed the same thing on the piano, but they had them imagine they were practicing and not really practicing and do the same amount of time, but just imagine it.
Yeah.
When they checked the brain scans, before and after of both groups, they found that even the group who had imagined playing that piece had the exact same changes in their brain scan as the ones who actually were playing it.
Wow.
So we are rewiring our brains with things that the way we think all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite an amazing process.
How can we, just as practical folks every day, living our lives, going to work, or taking care of the household, or whatever we do to try to function every day, how can we start to rewire our brains so, as you say, we can worry productively?
Right. So I think that the productive side of worry is going to be taking charge and feeling, saying positive mental statements, creating outlook makeovers. Well, I call this creating manifestos, and that is, how would you like to feel? I am safe. I am fine, or even things like I am abundant, I am happy, I am healthy. So part of the ways to program it is to restate the way you would like to feel, and then you could say, I don't want to worry, I don't want to worry, your whole day, and you're probably going to worry. So you need to do a few other things.
Yeah.
Turn it around so that it's positive. I am calm, as opposed to I am worried.
Yes.
I'm not worried.
Yeah.
I am calm, right?
Yeah, sure.
And then put emotion into it. You could say words as much as you want, but really when you start to retool and rewire, what you're doing is you are adding a strong positive emotion to it, you're turning it around in a positive way, and you're practicing it. So those three ways will really put you on a much better wired frequency for your brain.
Wow.
It's about as best as you can do.
Yeah, and would you say that practicing these concepts, which you give in your book, by the way, which are very easy to understand and most helpful, after a while they sort of incorporate and they start building the new neural pathways that really believe these feelings that are more positive, as we might say, right?
Yes, we're taking charge. We're not the victim where things have automatically been programmed in our minds. We are the programmers. We are deciding, how do I want to live my life? Mm-hmm. And we are taking charge to do that. I mean, it's a science called neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
Neuro being your nerves and plasticity meaning a changeable.
Mm.
So we are now taking charge of our lives, thinking the way we want to. It's not a perfect process because, remember, we're letting go of perfection.
Right.
But it's the kind of thing that over a period period of time. And certainly in my life, it did tremendously. As I said, I was afraid to go out of St. Louis for more than 20 years.
Wow.
I would never fly.
Wow.
Well, you know, when I overcame this, I flew to Greece by myself and gave a presentation in front of hundreds of international scientists on the Isle of Rhodes in Greece. I knew at that point I had overcome this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a kind of almost everyday miracle that anybody can do by focused intention, by turning your life around, and by taking charge of your own thoughts.
Wow. Is that true? Is that amazing? And, you know, when the mind starts really thinking and taking charge, then a little more belief happens, and then it's more of a reality that you embrace in your life, you know?
Yes, and then you can take the risks that are so important, because I could have been fine, I could leave St. Louis, but did I leave St. Louis? Did I put that foot on that plane? Did I strap myself in? It's like, you can't change your mind when you're 20,000 feet up. It's like, you know, but I also didn't just jump on the plane to Greece first. You know, I took other steps, for instance, to build my sense of power and to really know on a very deep level, I can handle this.
That's
doesn't
right.
mean I won't be anxious or that I won't be worried, mm-hmm. but I'll handle it.
That's
so that really is the important key to all of this, is that not that you'll never worry or feel anxious, but that you'll be a manager of those emotions.
Right. You can face your fears and power through them, right? I mean, that's what
you
works.
Can.
You know, it's very difficult. And what I always tell patients, Catherine, is that no one really has ever died of a panic attack. Many times we've been rushed to the emergency room because we're thinking, I think my heart's going on me, or I'm having a heart attack. It's palpitating. I can't breathe. I've got some, there's sometimes heaviness associated. You know, many of the symptoms with so-called panic attack disorder are associated with heart palpitations. But once we define it is indeed our anxiety that's overcoming us, you know, it's so important to know that you can face it and overcome it by using a lot of your techniques, which are great, which I really like.
And you have to be a little tolerant. You do become a little tolerant of when your body, because your body becomes a little more anxious or a little worried.
Sure.
You know, when I was at my most sensitized, panicky self, that anything that changed, I go, oop, what's that? Is that going to do this? Is that going to do that? So now I'm on guard. Yeah. Is this thing going to pop into a panic attack? Oh, my God. But
exactly.
No, what you learn is that you can take some of that and you can talk yourself down and out of it. And even, honestly, if something would happen where I would have a panic attack, then what I would be doing is retooling from that, because then I would say, you know, or if I would have high anxiety, I'd say, okay, I see some red flags going on here that I didn't see.
Yeah.
This is giving me information. I'm going to step back. I'm going to start relaxing. If I start feeling high anxiety, then I know to take care of those needs, not ignore them.
Right.
So I think that you get wiser at doing that once you start getting better. And recognizing it.
Boy, you know, that's so true. Catherine, you really nailed it with what's going on in our society and, you know, of course, the big change that's supposedly coming to our world on December 21st and all. We're all gearing up for it. And you know, it's probably better to know about the good anxiety and worry. And you talk also about intuition. What, can you elaborate a little bit more on when worry and anxiety are good for us?
Absolutely. So, you know, worry and anxiety, you know, from a biological standpoint, those things are useful emotions.
Yep.
As much as we maybe get annoyed with the anxiety or don't want to have it, everything that is in our body that's been emotion is there to give you information.
Mm.
So when you are feeling worried, it's giving you information. There's a problem in your life that you need to think about solving.
Mm.
So recognize and be more solution-oriented to that. So, you know, create solutions. It's sometimes the solution you create is that I can't handle this right now, or there's nothing I can do. So then you can try to compartmentalize your worries, where you say, I choose what to worry about at this point, and not, you know, I'm not going to worry about this right now, but I will consider this and try to find some solutions. Some things you can find solutions to, some you just have to compartmentalize and put on the back burner.
Mm.
And so anxiety-wise is that those the thing to do with anxiety is also recognize that's level two, to me, of your worry. Worry is more cerebral. You're thinking about this, you're thinking about that. Anxiety starts to kick in when you're starting to have physical symptoms, you know, the heart racing, the shortness of breath, feeling of on edge. So once you're at feeling the anxiety mode, recognize it for what it is as a message, you know, something is going on. And if it's you who is worrying as opposed to just the situation, then you try to work on yourself.
Wow.
As I said, try to relax more. Do something like go out and take a walk in nature.
Mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of things that you can do that to help, you know, exercise more if you aren't doing it, because that's a natural antidepressant and stress reliever.
Yeah.
Eat better. You know, if you're eating a lot of junk food,
yeah,
a lot of high sugar, a lot of caffeine,
oh,
you
yeah
know, try to not do that and do things that are going to help you. You know what? Here's a good one, too, is smile.
Yes.
Even if you smile, I love science. Someone did a study on this and showed that even if you don't really mean it, smiling releases mood-enhancing endorphins.
Yes.
And I think if you smile and you really mean it, it really releases a lot. So,
yes,
you know, those are just things you can do to try to help yourself.
Yeah, that great suggestions, Catherine. You know, do practice the behavior and sometimes the thought will follow. I think it's a really great, great idea. Also, you know, you were talking about the things we eat and the stress and how it's unhealthy for us. New studies show that workplace stress contributes to like 72% of men and 64% of women being overweight or obese. You know, and that's stress. That's worry. That's making us fat.
We're getting fat and worried. We got to make some changes here.
You got that right. Hey, if you just tuned in here, my special guest today is author Catherine Tristan. Her latest book is great. It's called Why Worry? Stop Coping and Start Living. Hey, hallelujah on that one. We have a couple of emails. I would like to put this question out to you, if you don't mind, Catherine. It's from Aaron, who writes, I listen to Dr. Michelle a lot and enjoy her spiritual psychology. Thank you, Aaron. I like that. He said, you're a scientist. Tell me about the God particle. What is that about and how can that affect us?
Well, the God particle is called the scientific name for that is the Higgs boson. Now, I had to look into this a little bit because it's been a while since I looked into of quantum physics.
Right.
But there are little particles called bosons, and as opposed to, I thought this guy's name was Higgs boson.
Right.
That's a crazy name, but no, a boson is a particle, B-O-S-O-N.
Huh.
And Higgs is the one that they named this after.
Ah.
It was suggested for many years to be the particular quantum energy particle that helped you to transition from energy to matter. In other words, how do those changes ever make those changes? And
right,
you think of spirit,
yep,
is you think of energy, you think of your body, it's more like matter.
Hmm.
Well, you know, the Higgs boson particle was documented to be a real thing,
mm-hmm,
in a 17-mile circular particle generator, I think, was it in France?
Oh, yeah.
CERN?
Yes, yes.
And it was just this last summer. And so it was a big deal. They, you know, it's... is it probably as big a deal as Copernicus, you know, discoveries and
yes,
Galileo, but
right,
most of us don't quite know what this means.
Mm.
But I think that the gist of that is that the God particle simply means we now have an idea in quantum physics,
mm-hmm,
as to how spirit goes to matter. And it's
wow
related to the presence, the documented presence of
mm-hmm
this Higgs boson.
Mm. That is great. Thank you so much for emailing us, Aaron. I sure appreciate that.
Great question.
Yeah, that was a great question.
I'm going to read up on quantum physics tonight.
No, you did good, girl.
Thank you.
We have another email here from Jessica, and she said, I'm really worried about getting fired from my job. I hate my boss, yet I can't hardly pay my bills. I guess that's what she's saying here. How can I stop worrying about this if I'm living under fear of getting fired and yet can't manage my finances?
Boy, do I hear some terribleizing there, which may be true.
Yeah.
We never said things that are potentially terrible are not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing is, we make them worse.
Mm.
And you're probably not going to want to hear my advice, Jessica. But you know, what I'm going to say is, don't focus on the possibility of your being fired.
Mm.
Focus on what you can do for the company, how grateful you are to have a job
now.
Yes. And turn it around. I hate my boss. My suggestion, which again you may not want to hear, find some things you like about the guy,
mm-hmm.
because that energy comes out of you whether you think you're hiding it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's not a particularly good character, but maybe he's having a bad life. You know what I mean? So, you know, try to turn that around, and it may be annoying for you to do that, but if you don't, you will maintain that negativity. And the thing is, my philosophy is what you think about, you bring about. So if you want to try to bring about more peaceful feelings and more happier feelings, then try to turn this around in some way that you can find acceptable. Doesn't mean he's going to get any better, but it means the way you react to him might improve.
Boy, is that true. Great advice,
and good
Catherine.
Luck, Jessica.
Yeah.
That's not an easy situation.
Yeah, it's a tough place to be right now.
Nobody
wants to quit. Nobody wants to, you know, stir things up or get angry and all. But, you know, it does sound like you're harboring some of this, as you said. Ooh, that's a strong word, that hate thing. But
And look around for another job, too. You know, maybe the best thing that would happen to you is to get laid off and find something that you actually like. So
Boy, is that true?
You never know where your challenges will lead you. But try to stay in more positive frame of mind, and that'll bring more of that to you.
Yes. And that's in keeping with your core concept. You talk about the acronym of RISK. Sometimes we have to put it out there and, you know, don't quit your job yet, Jessica, but kind of put it out there and see what might feel good for you and the possibilities, even though it is, you know, the end of the year, we're coming into a new year. Hey, there are a lot of possibilities out there for you, possibly.
And a lot of mental tools that you can have, you know, at your own leisure. And that, think about your feeling happy going to a job. You know, feel yourself enjoying your job. Put that out there. Focus on that thought every day. Envision that for 5 minutes. You know, just picture yourself feeling happy going to a job.
Yes.
Now, either this job could turn around, or maybe you will get fired and find a job. Ah, that's the perfect job. But put out how you want to feel, how you want the end result to be, and try to turn it around from that. That's like working natural energy. It happens by who knows how, but that's another way to handle this situation, too.
Great stuff, Catherine. I'm so in agreement also with your suggesting to Jessica that she have a little more empathy possibly for the boss, whether it's a she or a he. Sometimes you have to. If somebody's so angry and nasty and mean, you know that they're suffering within themselves. They're getting pressure from their boss, or, you know, and they're having issues. So sometimes we have to say, oh, that poor thing, they must really be sad, you know, trying to incorporate that.
So I say they're not having a bad day. They're having a bad life,
maybe.
Who knows?
Exactly.
And who knows what they're going through. Yeah, you know, we don't always know.
That's right. Thank you so much for emailing us, Jessica. Good stuff. We have a couple of more minutes here, Catherine. Of all the advice you give, what is the most important that you can share with listeners?
I think the most important is to live in the present moment. Now, that may sound a little trite, but I just actually went through a scary time when I was very healthy writing this book, and suddenly I found I had some kind of a mass, and they wanted to do surgery, and really? I'm writing a book on why worry?
What?
And what I found myself, and so I ended up having the surgery, and it was benign, so, you know, no worries.
Good, good.
But I went through, and what I did was take my own advice. That was the annoying part. I have to take my own advice on this. Focus on the present moment. You know, and try to actually just live your life in thinking about now. As we said, most of what we worry about never happens. Visualize the best happening, not the worst.
Mm.
And one other really, if I have time, one other really good thing to do is don't go to bed. Well, here, let's turn that around. Go to bed in a more peaceful mindset.
Oh, is that true?
I suggest don't think about your worries. Mm-hmm. You know, find five good things that happened during the day. Mm. Take five really deep breaths, and then focus on someone you love for a few minutes or something that you love. Take five more deep breaths, and then just try to fall asleep.
Oh.
That let you marinate overnight in good, positive, healthy feelings.
I love that. That's great, Catherine. Marinate. What a great word. Marinate your brain.
5-minute mental marinade.
There you
that's
go,
what
girl.
I call it.
And you probably have better dreams too, folks. You know?
What do you think? Is it catchy?
Yeah. There you go. I love it. Listen, how can people get a hold of your book and find out more about you, Catherine?
So my book is available from my website, whyworrybook.com.
Yep.
It's also available on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. It's pretty well available anywhere that you look. You may have to order it, or it may be in the stores. It sort of depends. But you can also link to it from my website if you want someplace quick to go.
Really good book, folks. Check it out.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it, Catherine. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. Always a pleasure to have you. And,
well, it was so fun. You're such a great host, Dr. Michelle. And
well, thank you.
Some great questions, and I'm glad we got some listener input. And, our thoughts create our lives. We have to choose them wisely.
Boy, well said. And I know we helped a lot of people, and thank you so much for doing that.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, Catherine. Take good care, and the show will, of course, be available for replay or rerun tomorrow with all the information on you. So have a good one.
And you too.
All right. Bye-bye now. All right, folks, it's about that time. What we're going to do here is just let you know that you can email me if you have any more questions or concerns, if you'd like to know more information. Of course, on the website here on LA Talk Radio, don't forget that you'll be able to find out more about Catherine and get a hold of the book as well here. As I always say when I leave, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. See, that's the way it works always. This is Dr. Michelle. Have a beautiful day and the rest of the week. I'll be back next week and more great insights on how to make your life better. You can stay on the couch if you like. More wonderful shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio.